Today, hope springs eternal, minus crypto, for now. Hello again, it's Martin North from Digital Finance Analytics, where they're supposed to covering finance and private news with a distinctively Australian flavour. In our weekly review, we're going to start with looking at the action in the US, go across to Europe and Asia, and end in Australia. Global stocks rallied on Friday for a second day on hopes that cooler US inflation would lead to less aggressive interest rate hikes by the Federal Reserve, an outlook that pushed the dollar to its biggest two-day drop in 13 years. On Wall Street, stocks rose to add to the prior day's biggest daily percentage gains for the S&P 500 and NASDAQ in more than 2.5 years, after year-over-year inflation in October fell below 8% for the first time in 8 months. We got a potential view that the Fed may not need to get as horrid as we thought over the last couple of weeks. Marvin Lowe, senior global macro strategist at State Street in Boston, said about the market's exuberance, risks could be stabilizing here. The Fed has no choice but to press on, but if inflation is no longer rising, that indicates the end of more extensive tightening, maybe in the year, Locke said. Now, the Dow Jones Industrial Average rose 0.1%, the S&P 500 gained 0.92%, and the NASDAQ Composite advanced 1.88%. Energy stocks rose more than 3%, buoyed by rising oil prices as China eased some of its COVID-19 restrictions, stoking hopes for a jump in demand. Occidental Petroleum Corporation, Phillips 66, and Devon Energy Corporation led the sector higher, up more than 4%. Technology continued to rack up gains as well for a second straight day, as optimism that inflation has peaked encouraged further bets on less hawkish Federal rate hikes. Alphabet rose more than 2% to lead bid tech higher, while Apple, Microsoft, and Meta platforms were all up more than 1%. But some continued to caution against going all in on tech and highlighted the need to take a selective approach, prioritizing companies that have solid fundamentals and are able to pass on higher costs to consumers. Companies that are growing their cash flows and have not been hurt as bad from inflation are going to perform better than those who were the darlings of the 2021 period that just went straight up, said Wealth Consulting Group Chief Investment Officer Jim Warden. Consumer stocks were also in the ascendance, with casino and travel stocks catching a bid on news of easing COVID-19 restrictions in China, while retail stocks were led higher by Ralph Lauren. Ralph Lauren rose more than 9%, in fact, after the designer apparel maker reported better than expected fiscal second quarter results, driven by solid performance in North America. And Wedbush lifted its price target to $100 from $95, citing greater confidence about management's execution during tough times. Amazon also played a big role in pushing consumer stocks amid reports that the e-commerce giant is mulling cost-cutting measures that could include culling unprofitable divisions. Healthcare, however, kept the broader market from rising further as investors appeared to move out of defensive corners of the market. Cigna, Humana, and Elevance Health were the worst performers, down more than 5%. Morgan Stanley's Mike Wilson, a well-known stock market skeptic who correctly predicted this year's slump, said the recent rally in US equities isn't finished and should keep going over the coming weeks. There's probably further to go, probably through a Thanksgiving, maybe even into early December, Wilson, the bank's chief US equity strategist, said. I don't think the rally is over at this point. Well, the MSCI's All Country World Index rose 1.91%, lifting it to its highest level since mid-September, as the market repriced expectations for the Fed's target rate to peak below 5%, or about 20 basis points lower than recent highs. And the MSCI Emerging Markets Index jumped 5.19%. That's the biggest single-day surge since March. Market bets that the Fed will raise rates by 50 basis points at its next meeting in December increased, while the probability of a 75 basis point hike decreased. While this year has been amazingly exciting and fascinating from a market perspective, maybe its crescendo was really yesterday, said Christian Chan, Chief Investment Officer at Asset Mark Financial Holdings. John O'Toole, Global Head of Multi-Asset Investment Solutions at Asset Management Amundi, said the reaction in stock markets to the CPI showed investors were pretty desperate for good news and could be getting ahead of themselves. Rates could stay at an elevated level for an extended period of time, and that's something that financial markets just don't have in their outlook, he said. The weaker outlook for corporate earnings and jobs has yet to be fully priced into markets, he added. Investors poured into risky assets after the US data, driving the dollar down 1.6% on the day, and the greenback posted its biggest two-day decline since March 2009, with the DXY ending at 106.42. The yield on benchmark US 10-year paper slipped below 4% on Thursday, while the two-year was at 4.33, but US bond markets were closed on Friday for Veterans Day. Oil prices rose after the US inflation data, but were on track for weekly declines of more than 4% due to COVID-related worries in China. US crude futures settled up 2.76% to $88.87 a barrel, while Brent rose 2.25% to settle at $95.78. Gold bugs, though, are having their biggest week in 30 months, as their two biggest tormentors, the dollar and cryptos, were vanquished this week. US dollar futures benchmark December contracts finished up 1.17% on Friday to $1,773 per ounce, and rose 5.5% on the week, its most since a 6.5% jump during the week of April 3, 2020. Gold has rocketed since Thursday, as US inflation registered its slowest annual reading in 9 months, heightening speculation that the Federal Reserve may back off from the aggressive rate hikes that it's executed since March, and sending the dollar crashing. Gold is probably winning at least some of the money that has exited cryptocurrencies this week, said Philip Strabel, Chief Market Strategist at Blue Line Futures in Chicago. There's no hard data to corroborate fund flows from crypto into gold now, but I'd be surprised if it wasn't happening, Strabel said. Normally, it's the other way around, as gold seldom finds love from the crypto crowd, but gold looks relatively safer now than digital currencies, and imagine it has gained some new respect that could mean higher allocations that may have been meant for crypto. Craig Wellen, analyst at online trading platform Onya, joined a legion of analysts around the world who expects gold to get up to $1,800 at least after clearing resistance at between $1,770 and $1,780. Gold bulls have been waiting for this week for a long, long time, a week or so in which the Fed signaled a potential slowing of rate hikes and the CPI data displayed a significant and broad-based decline, he said. There's been an explosion in gold buying over the past 24 hours, and we now seem to be approaching the 50-day exponential moving average of 1,771. SK Charting's chief technical strategist, Sunil Kumar Dixit, said, at above the 50-week EMA of 1,771, the next leg higher for gold sits at 1,796 to 1,805. But he also cautioned that the yellow metal could still lose its upward mojo and turn lower suddenly, as it's done in the past. Now, over in Europe, Eurozone yields firmed, and the EU's Executive European Commission said that it sees a bigger Eurozone slowdown in 2023, though only slightly affecting jobs or public finances. Now, over in the UK, Britain's economy shrank in the 3 months to September, at the start of what's likely to be a lengthy, if shallow, recession. The ONS said UK gross domestic product fell 0.2% in the third quarter from the second, a slightly better outcome than the 0.5% decline feared, thanks to a stronger than expected performance by industry in September. However, this still represented the first contraction in 6 quarters, with GDP dropping 0.6% in the month of September alone, putting the country on track to what the Bank of England has warned could be the longest recession in decades. European stock markets traded higher on Friday, continuing that positive tone generated by the softer-than-expected US inflation number, even as growth data pointed to the UK entering that recession. The DAX in Germany traded 0.56% higher. The CAC 40 in France rose 0.58%, but the FTSE in the UK fell 0.78%. although the UK Financial Services Index rose 1.65%. Now, China provided another leg up to global markets that were already rallying hard after that lower-than-expected October inflation number from the US. Asian stocks scaled 7-week highs, with the MSCI's broadest index of Asia-Pacific shares outside Japan set for its biggest one-day percentage jump since March 2020. In China, health authorities on Friday eased the country's heavy COVID curbs, including shortening by 2 days the quarantine times for close contacts of cases and inbound travellers. So the country's Shanghai Composite Index rose 1.69% and the Hang Seng Index surged 7.74%. The National Health Commission said it will cut quarantine requirements for those arriving in the country to a total of 8 days from 10 and also relax the requirements for contacts of infected people in parallel. The moves are the most significant relaxation of China's zero COVID policy yet and come despite serious outbreaks taking place in Beijing, Guangzhou and Zhengzhou. The offshore yuan hit a one-month high before retracing little to trade down to 7.1083. Japan's Nikkei 225 index rose 2.9%, while the South Korean KOSPI index jumped 3.37%. So shares across Asia were swept up in that global relief rally on Friday after the softer-than-expected US inflation data spurred bets that the Federal Reserve would slow the pace of its aggressive policy tightening. And as a result, the S&P ASX 200 soared 2.79% to 7,158, with the index hitting its highest level in 5 months. Friday's rally lifted the benchmark to a weekly gain of 3.85%, increasing evidence of a peak in US inflation and central banks moving towards at least slowing their rate hikes, along with positive seasonals in the months ahead, and the track record of US shares rallying after the midterms adds to our confidence that the next 12 months will be positive for shares, said Shane Oliver, head of investment strategy at AMP. The local technology sector was boosted by a decline in bond yields, with Zip surging 18.4% to 74 cents, Block jumping 11.5% to $100.91, and Megaport up 13.6% to $6.11. Nine Entertainment, which is the publisher of the Australian Financial Review, sealed a 5-year deal for the Australian Open for about $425 million in cash, and shares in Nine firmed 4.4% to $2.13. Ramsay Healthcare jumped 4.7% to $61.85 after reporting that activity and profitability improved across all regions over the September quarter as COVID-19 cases fell in the community. Pilbara Minerals announced it had secured a $250 million government loan to support the expansion of its Pilgangura operation in the Pilbara region of Western Australia. The stock added 0.9% to $5.37. And the Star Entertainment Group appointed Pendle Chair Deborah Page and Tony Thornton as non-executive director. Shares in the company rose 0.3% to $2.97. Accent Group rallied 11.6% to $1.68 after reporting that total group-owned sales increased 52% in the first 18 weeks of the 2023 financial year, compared with the prior corresponding period. And the banks rose with ANZ up 1.48%, CBA up 1.7%, NAB up 1.15%, and Westpac was up 1.99%, but Macquarie was up 5.6%. So Old World Financials did well. Whereas in the crypto pain land, Sam Bankman-Fried's digital asset empire filed for Chapter 11 bankruptcy, capping the downfall of one of crypto's wealthiest and most influential moguls and his collection of high-flying ventures, including exchanges and a massive trading operation. At his peak, crypto mogul Sam Bankman-Fried was worth around $26 billion. At the start of this week, he still had $16 billion, but following the collapse of his crypto exchange FTX and his Alameda Research trading house, his assets in the Bahamas have been frozen by the authorities, and he's being investigated by the US Securities and Exchange Commission for potential violations of securities rules, and regulators in Cyprus are poised to suspend his license to operate in Europe. By Thursday, the Bloomberg Billionaires Index was valuing FTX's US business at $1, down from $8 billion in January. That's not a typo, $1. More than 130 entities tied to FTX.com, FTX US, and trading firm Alameda Research were listed in filings at federal court in Delaware, with the Alameda petition listing assets and liabilities of at least $10 billion each. That easily makes it the biggest bankruptcy in the US this year, affecting investors and other counterparties around the world. Though Chapter 11 lets companies continue to operate while they work out a plan to repay creditors, FTX is filing on Friday morning, a 23-page form checked boxes, offered no hint of reorganization plans. Bankman-Fried resigned as chief executive officer of FTX Group as part of the filing, and John J. Ray III was appointed to replace him, according to a Twitter statement. Ray, a turnaround and restructuring expert, previously served several senior roles in bankruptcies, including Enron. The initial filings offered no explanation for the firm's downfall. It's such an unfortunate, stunning, and shocking moment for the industry, Owen Lau, analyst at Oppenheimer & Co. said. There will be a lot of angry investors, angry customers, and angry regulators around the world. Even in the global cryptocurrency landscape that's seen numerous firms rise and fall, FTX's bankruptcy stands out. Not only did it operate one of the world's largest exchanges for digital assets, it was rapidly on its way to mainstream recognition, establishing Bankman-Fried as a statesman for his industry, who could speak easily with US lawmakers and regulators about shaping its future. At the time the market peaked in 2021, FTX had earned the trust of more than 5 million users worldwide, trading more than $700 billion worth of crypto that year alone. Now, of course, a court will weigh in on how to handle the interests of customers, creditors, and business partners seeking to be made whole. Bankman-Fried, an avid supporter of Democrats, also made pledges to help others, promising that one day he'd give all his wealth away to charity and political causes. The company's name was ubiquitous across professional sports, including Formula One racing, soccer, baseball, and basketball, even adorning the home arena of the National Basketball Association, Miami Heat. That arena deal was supposed to last 19 years. Crisis quickly befell FTX this month after prices for the exchange's native crypto token FTT plummeted and users raced to withdraw their assets. Rivo crypto exchange leader Chenping CZ Zhao had earlier said he would sell some $529 million worth of coins to recent revelations that came to light, appearing to allude to a CoinDesk report that raised questions about Alameda's financial health. Crypto assets dropped on the news, with Bitcoin slumping by as much as 8% before regaining some ground, and Ether and smaller tokens also declined. Solana, which was backed by Alameda, tumbled 10%. FTX's implosion came almost exactly 1 year after Bitcoin peaked at around $69,000. BlockFi, a troubled crypto lender that received emergency financing from FTX US earlier this year on Thursday, said it will pause client withdrawals, citing a lack of clarity over the status of Bankman-Fried's empire. Zao's Binance Holdings tentatively agreed on Tuesday to buy FTX.com amid the exchange's liquidity crunch, but backed out of the deal following a short period of due diligence. Bankman-Fried then pivoted to hold talks for last-ditch financing, including with fellow crypto entrepreneur Justin Sun. Now, US authorities are investigating Bankman-Fried as well as FTX. His wealth, which stood at around $16 billion at the start of the week, has vanished, along with the reputation of a crypto wunderkind who just recently was regarded as a savior of swathes of the industry. The fallout is significant in that many people will lose money, many of whom will be newcomers to investing and may lose faith in the ability of financial markets to provide a store of wealth in the future. Here's a couple of lessons. Lesson one, you should never speculate more than you can afford to lose in an asset class that has no clear intrinsic value. And lesson two, markets are just that, not good, not bad, maybe rigged, maybe not, but the market is the market. And data from on-chain analytics firm Glassnode shows that over one-third of Bitcoin supply being held as a loss by long-term holders. That's a new all-time high. Profitability has taken a serious hit in recent days, and on-chain data confirms that even the most seasoned investors are suffering. As the Bitcoin US dollar crashed to two-year lows of $15,600, investors began to lose big, and at the current levels around $70,000, the situation is not much better. Glassnode shows that the long-term holders are holding around 35.4% of the Bitcoin supply and over 5.9 million coins at a loss on November the 9th, decreasing by only 1% on November the 10th. Short-term holders held another 17% of the supply at a loss, and short-term holders in profit accounted for just 0.06% of the supply on November the 9th. A wallet address, by the way, is classified as a long-term holder or a short-term holder if it held coins for more or less than 155 days, respectively. The overall number of Bitcoin addresses in profit, 50%, is meanwhile currently its lowest since March 2020 in the aftermath of the COVID-19 crash. And FTX's native token, FTT, plunged more than 28% to $2.55, having fallen 90% month to date. So in the crazy world of crypto, an exchange or decentralized finance player can sell 1 million invented tokens as a cryptocurrency to 1 million retail customers for a dollar each. That $1 million proceeds can then be used as collateral for leverage, held on deposit, or spent on a Lamborghini, or perhaps reinvested. However, the token won't rise in value unless a third party steps in to create a market by offering to buy and sell from its 1 million holders at floating prices. This is the crypto exchange's role in making markets in Bitcoin, Ethereum, Solana, Dogecoin, and thousands of other altcoins. Without the market makers and their vast advertising budgets, the tokens will be worth close to their intrinsic value of zero. Even the world's largest cryptocurrency, Bitcoin, relies on exchanges to make a market. Nobody stands ready to redeem it, like Australia's Reserve Bank or the US Federal Reserve, as a centralized authority or issuer, unlike the main markets. A traditional regulated stock or commodity exchange doesn't make a market in securities or assets. It simply guarantees trade settlements if either counterparty defaults. The regulation of exchanges by multiple arms of government means investors trust their securities can be converted into cash on demand for a profit or loss. That's called liquidity. The exchanges exist as virtual monopolies due to the strict regulatory environment under which they are licensed to operate. Companies cannot list on exchanges like the ASX unless they meet strict legal and disclosure requirements. So it's obvious what the media and industry call crypto exchanges are actually loosely regulated market makers. Over the pandemic era, these market makers make fortunes by charging fees on trades and profiting on the spread between the market rate and the rate offered to retail traders. Despite claims that code is law and blockchains are immutable, crypto still relies heavily on trust as a concept, and its unregulated nature leaves it vulnerable to collapse. In fact, next Tuesday on my live stream, I'll be discussing this with Adam Stokes, who, of course, is in crypto land. Be interested to see what he says. Mark your diary and be prepared to ask some hard questions. So more broadly, you can see here that the markets are still in up mode at the moment. Of course, the question is this another bear market rally, or does it mark a change in direction? We'll see. But I think two takeaways here are important. The first is the slowdown in revenue that we're likely to see is not being translated into future expectations on the exchanges yet. In other words, companies are still significantly overvalued. Secondly, the point to make is, of course, that the Fed and other central banks have not said they're going to drop rates. They've merely said they're going to ease the rate at which they might lift them. And so we still need to expect interest rates to go higher. Again, I'm not sure that's fully plumbed in to the market's thinking. So what I'd say is be a little bit cautious about calling this the bottom at the moment. It may well be, but we will know later. Personally, I still think there's more downside. Not least because, of course, unemployment is likely to rise, mortgage defaults are likely to rise, and property prices are still going to fall. Well, maybe that's another reason why gold might be going higher for the moment. Maybe that is now a bit of a safe haven. On the other hand, that's been said before, and I still believe that the gold market is fundamentally manipulated by the big players So even that cannot be guaranteed. I'm Martin North from Digital Finance Analytics. Many thanks for watching, and I'll see you again next time.